Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show is underway, sponsored by Harvest Ridge Coffee from Refreshment Services Pepsi. I love my Harvest Ridge every morning. Premier coffee roasted and delivered in small batches. And you can get the signature roast like we get here, or you can have a Kona blend or a Colombian Supreme. How about Highlander Grog? Whatever you want, Harvest Ridge has a coffee for you. Dr. Brian Renfro, the president of John Wood Community College, is my guest this morning, my first guest. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
And you had a board meeting last night. The trustees met. What were the highlights of that?
Board meeting last night, a great meeting. Everything went well. First, let me say thanks for having me on the air again. It's always a pleasure to be here. Great to visit with you and tell about everything that's going on at John Wood.
And there's a lot going on at John Wood.
A lot going on at John Wood. We're excited to talk about last week on Friday. We had our 50th commencement ceremony.
Is that amazing?
It is.
50 years strong.
So, yeah, we had five members from the original graduating class visit, share stories prior to the ceremony, and then recognize them during the ceremony as well. And so really a lot of our board meeting focused around talking about our graduates, what our graduates were doing, how many of them we had, and what degrees were they in, and so forth. But
do you track who has a job? Or I know they may not have a job the day they walk across, but do you keep track of, like, who has a job in 3 months, who has a job in 6 months, or hard to track?
That's hard to do. Our students are fluid, and they move, and a lot of them have temporary addresses and phone numbers, and our students hardly use email anymore, right? They're the social media generation. We do not, but we informally we do try to figure out where our students are going. But we had 466 associate degrees and certificates that were awarded in this class. 212 of those graduates are in transfer programs. And we do track the ones that go to the university. We use the National Clearinghouse as a data center. And so it takes a little while, about 6 months, but after the fall semester, we'll get a report back from them, and not only will it tell us how many of our students went on to a four-year school, but it'll actually tell us where they went as well.
And will it tell you, in a sense, how they're doing? Because I know that with all these agreements you have with, like, the University of Illinois, Western Illinois University, they want to make sure that the pre-education they're getting at John Wood matches so that they can transfer easily. And you've been doing that for years now, and that transfers portal has been fantastic for students.
It is. It's a significant cost savings to the families, again, and we know that the focus is on debt and higher education now with all the student loan media that's driving that, and the reality of it is choosing a community college is a third of the cost typically than a state university, and so it can be a significant cost savings. In regard to performance, what we find is we find out once they actually graduate from their bachelor's degree, but we don't really find out how they're doing along the way. Unfortunately, our tracking system doesn't allow that, but we try to keep in touch with many of our students as we can, and also our relationships with the universities. They tell us that our students do very well. And the ones that we do keep in touch with and come back and talk to us tell us that they do very well also. And a lot of times for students, you come from a small or rural high school and going to, as you did, the University of Illinois, that's a big, scary place.
Mm-hmm.
It can be. So a lot of times it's about kind of learning to navigate the process, and we try to not just educate them on the traditional subjects and classroom materials, but also on how to succeed in college. So developing study habits, also talking about the importance of registration and meeting with an advisor. And one of the things that we've done this last year as part of our Guided Pathways initiatives is we've created specific, what we call suggested course sequences for every major. And that means it takes the guesswork out of advising or which courses should I or shouldn't I take. We've laid it all out there. Our faculty have worked with our deans. And so each, what we call our program maps, each major, so if you're going to be in English or engineering or physics or nursing or whatever, we have a specific list of courses that you take. And those courses are part of the Illinois Articulation Initiative for most cases for our AA and AS degrees, and those courses are guaranteed to transfer to a four-year institute.
One of the problems that we had in years past, and I think colleges have fixed it now, is you needed 101 before you could take 201 or 301, and all of a sudden 101 wasn't offered that semester.
Yeah.
So now you're wasting time, or that class was closed because too many people wanted to take it. Are you having any difficulties at John Wood keeping young adults in sequence, yeah, in sequence, so that they can graduate in a timely manner?
Yeah, you know, and that's having those maps that we're advising off of really help with that, because when we know the number of majors, we can make sure that we have capacity and that we're offering those courses. So, to my knowledge, we really don't have any issues with that.
That's good, because years ago, you know, that was a big problem in some of our universities, and so much, in fact, that they actually had to go and say, we won't raise your tuition for your fifth year. You can stay, you know, at your current tuition, because they weren't admitting it was their fault, but they were saying you couldn't progress because you couldn't get the couldn't get the prerequisite you needed to take the next class.
Yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, we really try to focus on making sure that students have the courses that they need. Graduate on time, that's important. You know, our average age of students is around 24 years of age, so we do get a lot of traditional students coming right out of high school, but we get a lot of folks who graduate from high school and think, you know, college is not for me. They get out in the workforce and realize that probably is important for them to be able to advance or get ahead, and then they come back to us. So.
And they're a lot more mature at 24, too. I was going to say, think of the money not only going to community college saves on books and tuition, but just on beer. And so, you know, that's something else you probably don't tout too much, but is very true. What kind of actions?
I can only speak from personal experience on that.
What kind of actions were taken last night by the board? Was it a heavy agenda?
No, I would say it was not. The board had a couple of key items that we looked at. One of the things is we had five grants that we asked to the board. When we identify potential sources of funding, we go to the board and ask them to be able to submit those. And those grants range from traditional grants that we renew every year. One of them was our adult basic education or adult literacy program. We will submit that to the Illinois Community College Board. And, you know, that's something I think that's often overlooked, that John Wood Community College is a service that provides to the community, is our GED equivalency. So folks who drop out of high school and find themselves needing to go back to college or whatever they need to do to advance their career or their work situation, for many of them, they have to start with their high school diploma and getting their general education diploma or high school equivalency. And John Wood Community College offers GED classes for free, and that's why this grant funding is so important to us. For those folks who didn't finish high school, it's an opportunity for them to come back, and we work with them on an individual basis. We have over 100 students in our GED program. Since we opened our campus or our center at Bella East,
right here in the district downtown,
we've been serving more and more GED students, and what we find is most of those students, last year when I spoke at the GED graduation, we have many graduates, but only 12 that walked across the stage, and out of those 12, I think 10 of them were already enrolled and starting to take classes, working on their college degree or working on that workforce career and certificate.
Yeah, it's education can never be overlooked. Experience is nice, a trade is nice, but there's nothing like a good basic education. One of the things that didn't get renewed was the RSVP grant.
Yeah.
And John Wood has been the host of that for decades.
Over 33 years,
and what's going to happen? Because, you know, they've gone down to skeleton staffing now. They're trying to keep things going.
Yeah.
Of course, volunteers will still, we can kind of survive on our own. I'm an RSVP volunteer. You don't have to tell me. If somebody doesn't tell me to go to there on Wednesday, I'll still know to go to my assignment. But it's going to start to dwindle and affect, and I think today is the RSVP appreciation, volunteer appreciation luncheon at John Wood. So is there any hope that the college can come up with funds, or is that like no way?
Yeah, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about it. We have made some reduction in staffing in order to take the funds that we currently have now a little bit further. We will know in August if the federal government will release that grant cycle again. Obviously, if they do that, we will more than likely apply for that grant again. Hopefully this time we will be funded. But we also know that AmeriCorps, which is the federal government organization that plans and oversees the RSVP program, is experiencing significant cuts in funding, staffing. So we're not really sure what the future of that holds. We are trying to work with some of the community partners as well, United Way, et cetera, to talk about how we could work together to facilitate that role. Because really what RSVP does is really more of a facilitator. You can call and look for various places in order which to be able to volunteer. It's like you said, Mary, thank you for your service as a volunteer. We have a lot of great volunteers that are out there. I think we served roughly around 500 volunteers in RSVP last year. And so we want to still be able to serve them. And so we're going to wait and see how that next grant goes. We have funding to carry the program through March. And so right now that's kind of our plans to start looking for alternative funding sources. And I think we'll know a little bit more in August. If the federal government doesn't release that grant opportunity, then we're going to have to get serious about how we'll come up with some funds to keep it going.
It's a toughie. It's a toughie. Dr. Brian Renfro, the president of John Wood Community College, is my guest today. Lovely having him in our community, but unfortunately he is leaving. And so I'm going to ask you a question you can only ask public, you know, officials, really. How much money does the president of John Wood Community College make? Like, if I want to apply for your job when you're gone, not that I'm qualified, but if I was going to apply for your job, how much money does the John Wood Community College?
In fact, my contract by required law is posted on the John Wood Community College website. And so anybody can go out there and look it up. It's public information. And I think my salary is
$224,000. $224,000.
Yeah.
There are school superintendents for public schools that are making that. That's pretty low pay
for
a college president, isn't it?
Well, you know, I think it's all relative to size of the school, the areas that the schools encompass. And, you know, I would say it's probably on average or a little below average for the community college presidents in the state of Illinois.
You think you'll be able to attract a qualified candidate to replace you at that salary?
I do.
Okay. That's fantastic.
I do. It's a competitive salary.
Well,
in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and you're going on to bigger and better things. I mean, it's kind of hard. If you're the president of a college, it's kind of hard to say, I'm not going to advance my own career. You're telling all these kids to, you know, improve their skills, get more education, and then but you're going to find out buying a house up in the Quad Cities is a little bit different than buying a house in Quincy.
We closed last week. We closed last Wednesday on our house and took possession. And so now I'm the proud owner of two mortgages. I don't refer to them as home. I refer to them as mortgages, Mary.
You don't actually own it. Yeah. And my husband always says, even though we don't have a mortgage, he goes, we don't own it. If we don't pay the property taxes, they'll yank the land out right from under it. We'll fall into the basement. So the search is going well. Obviously, would they like to have somebody on board before you exit, or is that too ambitious?
Yeah, their goal is to have an interim president in place next month.
Did they talk about that last night?
They did talk about that in closed session. And I've not been a part of that process. I've volunteered my services, but it's one of those things. If you got a question, you ask me.
What can we do different than Renfro? They don't want you in there listening.
That's right. But I'm not putting my nose in the business of where it doesn't belong. But they know that I'm there to support them. And I will say this about the Board of Trustees: they're working very hard. And this board, you know, I think to me one of the most important things about a board, their characteristics. And this board, they truly care about the college. Many of them have vested. Many of them are graduates of the college. Many of them have worked and retired from the college. And many of them have education background. They've sent numerous or thousands of students to the college, so they understand the importance of it. And so they're doing due diligence and taking their time. And right now they've been reviewing applications for an interim. And that president will come in and serve until January, be in an interim capacity for 6 months starting July 1. And then they will conduct, as of now, they're planning on conducting a national search that will start probably in late September, early October.
So it could be this interim who carries on, or it could be somebody who doesn't want to be the president but is willing to step up temporarily in that role.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, they're really kind of fleshing that situation out right now.
It could be.
If you were one of the applications, if you put your application in.
When's the deadline?
And you
yesterday?
I think it was last Friday.
See,
I'm not sure because I didn't apply. So
I could have been. But last Friday was the cutoff, and now they're going to miss the best.
And we're not
going to
make any special exceptions for late entries. You know, we want it to be a fair and equitable application process. So, you know, the fact that you didn't apply was probably an oversight on your part, I'm sure.
I'm going to say what I said to all my college professors. I lost my homework. I have it done, right. But I left it at home.
Well, you know, at John,
I have that
we're about working with students. We understand that life and circumstances get in the way.
I have life and circumstances. I was in Las Vegas. I couldn't apply for the job. I was
in
Las Vegas. That ought to be.
That is what we would consider an unexcused.
I'm sorry. Janelle Farmer is in charge. She let me go because she's my friend. It has been delightful. I think I'll see you one more time, or will I?
Yeah, certainly.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's on my calendar for next month in June.
Oh, my gosh. Are you taking that secretary with you? Because you can't function without her.
Oh, man. I'll tell you what. I've got.
You know who should be the interim president of John Wood? Leah Benz.
You know what? She didn't put her application in, but I encouraged her.
Because we were gambling together. We should have. But, you know, it is so true. Obviously, we need great leadership, and we need great academic leaders to guide our students.
Yeah.
But some of the nuts and bolts of what happens happens at that clerical level or that advanced administrative level.
I can't
level.
Say enough good things about Leah Benz. She served 5 of the 7 presidents. You know, she probably knows more about being a college president than I do, for sure. I don't have any doubt about that. She probably has forgotten more than I know about being a college president, to tell you the truth.
But you're not taking her with you.
I'm not, unfortunately. I would. But you know, I think she's tied to the farm and the family here, but she is a gem of the institution that serves the Gem City for sure.
You put down on the not the qualifications, but the perks of being John Wood president. You put best secretary in
That's
the
right.
world. She told me I had 10 minutes with you, and we've taken 15.
You know
so you got to go.
All right.
I'm just
grateful to have had the 15. So thank you so much, Mary. And as always, we appreciate your support.
Thank you, Dr. Renfro. We'll be up and talk about emergency management services in just a moment. But first, we'll head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. John Simon, my guest today, and we don't talk to him often enough. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great.
It has been a little bit.
It has been. And, you know, part of the problem with that is you're so darn busy that unless there's a special week like this week,
right,
you don't think about, hey, we ought to come on and talk about our agency, which is emergency management.
Well, we have
emergency medical
that's
services.
That's right. And sometimes those get confused, but you know, that's
and
all right.
Sometimes news reporters say them wrong,
like I did
this morning. But this is EMS.
Hey, we'll give you a pass.
This is Emergency Medical Services.
It is.
Right.
It is, right.
So this is not tornado and all that other stuff that you also do. This is emergency medical services like hospital, ambulance, fire department, police department.
Right. So it's National EMS Week. And so really, you know, so it started last Sunday and it goes through... what is today? Thursday? It goes through, I think, Saturday. And so we kind of wrap up our activities tomorrow. You know, it's been a great week. We started off Sunday out at Prairie Crossings with our annual display of different department apparatus. And it was a new location this year. We did it over kind of in the Lowe's parking lot. And it was a great day. We had a lot of organizations. We had other area ambulance services there. Of course, we were there, Quincy Fire Department, Tri-Township, both Quincy Police Department, Adams County Sheriff's Department. And
what about AeroVac?
AeroVac was there, thank you. So they flew in. That's always a big hit with the kids. Survival Flight, they're another medical helicopter. They're based out of Hannibal. They came up and joined us. So for a couple hours, we had 2 helicopters on the ground And you know, it's a cool experience to get to see them land and be able to, because most people, you know, we do a lot of PR events throughout the year and people get to see an ambulance from time to time, but being able to go see a helicopter, it is a little bit of a special experience.
Well, and this is very important for children, but it's also very, very important for adults because we may have to be in the back of an ambulance at one time in our life. I know I have been.
Right.
And
let's hope
so,
not.
You know, if you're not quite as afraid going in, if you know that once that care arrives, like I know AirVac says, we're basically an emergency room in the air. Once we take off, we're not just transporting you, we're treating you. The same way when you get into an ambulance.
And I think that is probably one of the biggest misconceptions a lot of people have. They think, well, the ambulance service, that they're a fast ride to the hospital. Okay. In some cases, if you're really bad, that may be the case. We may have to use lights and siren to get you to the hospital. But in most cases, it's about being able to deliver emergency medical care where the patient is. And so our EMTs and paramedics, they're highly skilled. They're very well trained. And they can bring that emergency medical treatment that you might normally see in the emergency department to where the patient's having the emergency. And we start that treatment right there.
Right, and
that's what's important.
I think we also need to understand that, especially in Quincy, with our Quincy Fire Department being first responders as well, sometimes the treatment they give you don't even have to go to the hospital.
Right.
When the ambulance is called, are they required to transport you? Or if they feel like they've treated you enough to keep you stabilized and you say, I really don't want to go any further, are they required to take you to the hospital, or can they say, you'll be okay, or we recommend you go to the hospital, but do these
right.
tips? And I think
so. There's a couple of avenues there. So it really comes down to what does the patient need, and what do they want? So we have
it. Which are often two different things.
That very well could be. And what is really the best interest of the patient? So there could be some things, and we encounter. Let's take, for example, maybe somebody who had a diabetic emergency and they just didn't take their appropriate meds, or they didn't eat the way they needed to, and they got into this diabetic emergency and an ambulance was called, and we can come out and we can give medications, we can give to correct that. And within a few minutes, they're going to start to feel better. And then they know how to manage their care from that point forward.
Because the crisis is over and they're okay.
Right. And so it's not that they necessarily need to go to the emergency department. So we've been there, we've treated them, we've assessed them, and they can manage their care from that point forward. And so they don't have to go to the hospital. Then there are others where maybe a concerned citizen may call and they're okay. So, but then there are other cases, and they don't have to go to the hospital. Then there are other cases where maybe they're having chest pain, and we get there, maybe it's subsiding a little bit, and, well, I don't really want to go to the hospital, but really they probably should go to get checked out. And we're more than willing to take them, but at the end of the day, it's really the patient's choice if they go or not.
Wow, though, because, I mean, that's tough.
Yeah.
Because a heart attack is an interesting thing. You can be having one or just have had one, and you still need medical treatment after the heart attack.
Right. So our paramedics, they're very well skilled. They're very well trained to be able to. We'll use our cardiac monitor, and we'll put a bunch of patches on. We can do a 12-lead EKG. We can read and interpret that, and we can make some determination that okay, it doesn't look like there's anything major, but it does. It's not lab work. It's not all of the other assessment tools
right.
that a physician would look at. And so it does get to be a hard call. But at the end of the day, we can use our assessment tools. We inform the patient of what their options are. But ultimately, the decision is theirs.
Okay. So we're talking today with John Simon, and we're talking about emergency medical services and emergency response. And one thing that I'm always interested in is the fact that we live in a very rural county, but yet we have a pretty good ambulance system. Quincy firefighters kind of are the backup, and sometimes they get there first before the ambulance for Adams County. A lot of counties don't have what we have because they're so rural. But this costs a lot of money. How is the budget for example, the ambulance service? How is your staffing? How is your budgeting?
You know, you always get those questions in, no matter what we're talking
about,
right?
I know, because I want to know.
Yeah, but people need to know.
People need to know, because this is something hopefully you never need. I mean, I pay for the Quincy Fire Department every day, and trust me, I don't ever want to see them come to my house.
That's right. You know, so as taxpayers, we're paying for a cost of readiness, and so from the ambulance service perspective, we're a bit of hybrid, and so you know, a lot of people look at local government services as being wholly funded by taxpayer dollars, and with the ambulance service, it's not that way. We're a hybrid. We charge a fee just as if you were to go to urgent care, if you were to go to the emergency department, if you were to go see your physician, go to a doctor's office. They're going to submit that to your insurance. There's going to be either a copay or co-insurance, and you're going to have some responsibility for that. So we do bill for our services. We also know that the revenues off of those fees don't adequately cover the cost of ambulance services. So we have a system in Adams County where we have six units on 24/7, 365. And so three of those are positioned in Quincy, and then one positioned in Mendon, Camp Point, and then one in the Liberty area. And so why we do that is because just the way our geography is positioned, the majority of our call volume, about 85% of our entire call volume, occurs in what we refer to as the Quincy District. So it's anywhere from about Baseline Road all the way down to the South County line and about out to the Lakeshore Hills area on 104. And so that's what that district covers. And so 85% of our call volume occurs in and around Quincy, and then the other 15% is outlying. But if we were to position our ambulances only where the major call volume was, we would have a 20 or 30 minute response time to those other areas. Right now, we achieve that response time in about, average-wise, in the rural areas, about 9 to 10 minutes is where we see, you know, that average hit. So sure, there are some that are more and there are some that are less. Having rural ambulance service available with even in those rural areas within 6 to 8 minutes is a great accomplishment. Our citizens should be proud of that. So back to the funding model. So about 2/3 of our operating budget and our revenue comes from user fees. Only about 1/3 of our budget is supported by tax dollars.
Okay. And, of course, that's why everybody needs to know a little bit of basic first aid, how to revive somebody who's had a heart attack, CPR, you know, stuff like that, because 8 minutes without air is a fatal diagnosis.
Right. It's a long time, you know. And so, you know, our crews, they're, you know, when we get that tone alert from our dispatch center and it's a not conscious, not breathing, you know, we're out the door in seconds and we're rolling. We have, you know, other first responders that are going and in order to improve our patient outcomes. But you bring me to a good point, and it is EMS week, and Thursday, which is today, right? So in National EMS week, Thursday is Stop the Bleed Day. That's the theme of the day. And so one of the things that I would encourage people to do is prepare themselves, learn how to stop major hemorrhagic, you know, bleeding, that life-threatening bleeding. We offer that training. We also offer CPR training. We do first aid training. So reach out to our office. You can find us on Facebook, call our office, multitude of different ways. And our education staff, they do public classes on a regular basis so people can be prepared.
John, we never have enough time.
I know.
These are very important issues. So call me again next month, and we'll do it again.
Yeah, we need to do it again.
We need to do it regularly.
Okay. So, and then if you run across an EMT or a paramedic or no one, it is National EMS Week. Reach out, say thank you for the service that they do for our community, and really keeping all of our people safe.
Thank you very much. We'll take a break. When we come back, Don O'Brien's here with the Better Business Bureau. The fabulous Don O'Brien is here, fabulous D.O.B., from the Better Business Bureau. D.O.B. from BBB is here, as he is once a month. And today we're going to talk about an important topic, which is traveling and doing things like that and not getting scammed.
So we can be very lazy when we go look to travel? I know you just got done traveling.
Yes, but I went with an organized group. Everything was fine. Everything was up and up. I went with a certified travel and all this other stuff. Mickey Cosin's always telling me, don't ever go anywhere without some kind of safety net underneath you.
And that's a great idea, you know, especially if you're going places where you don't know. You know, like if I were to go overseas, I've never been overseas. I would want to, I know you're surprised there. I would connect with a travel agent you can trust or something like that.
Right.
You know, because you need to, you don't know the lay of the land. You don't know if the places you stay are legitimate or not. But if you, again, if it's somewhere like, you know, a big trip overseas, or even if you've never been to like Disney World before and you want to connect with someone, when we get into trouble, Mary, is when we're lazy with our searches. Let's say you think that, oh, I can do that Disney trip by myself. I don't need any help with that. I'm just going to go say, just do a generic Google search for Disney vacation homes or something like that.
Yeah.
And you could get railroaded into gosh knows where. So
parking's not included and you still have to get into the park. And yeah, you're like, oh, I thought I was going to waste a lot of money riding the monorail or staying in the park, but maybe in the end I should have done that because now I'm stuck outside the park in a traffic jam. There's no place to park my car.
Well, not only that, but you know, if you get there in this place, let's say you didn't go stay at a traditional hotel or at one of the properties that Disney has on property. Let's say you tried to get a good deal off campus, if you will. And all of a sudden you book this thing and that you Venmo'd or you cash app somebody some money to reserve this place, and you get there and there's no place, which is something we hear happen. Travel vacation scams are the 8th riskiest type of scam according to our scam tracker in 2024. And last year, consumers reported more than 1,600 travel scams and over $3 million in travel-related losses just to our BBB. So, you know, it can be dangerous out there. You want to have fun on your vacation. You want to have a good, relaxing time. It's time to get away. The last thing you need to do is run into something that you, you know, you've been scammed. So, again, you really need to do your research. I know I sound like a bro. I'm like the teacher at the head of the class saying, you got to study. You got to read up. You can't be lazy.
And it has to be a reliable source.
It's got to be a reliable source, yes. So, you know, there's just, you know, I'm not want to paint. It sounds like sometimes I paint everyone with the same brush, and that's not what I'm doing. I'm just wanting you to make sure that you stay away from those businesses that may not be legitimate. If, again, they're asking you to pay for things up front with either cash or any of those, one of those electronic payment systems like the Venmo or the Cash App or something that you don't have any type of recourse if something goes wrong, that's going to be a red flag for you. So it can be a very it can be a very fun time, but it also can be one that you can get in trouble with if you don't do your homework.
You know, just recently when I was on this big 12-day trip out west, we had to stay in 12 different hotels. Well, we stayed some of them more than one night, but you get online and you read the reviews, and some of them weren't too flattering, but I didn't find that to be the case. So you can also be scared off by a bad review by somebody who just likes to crab and moan. It is difficult sometimes. One thing I always do when I'm traveling and I'm doing more avant-garde, I'm just out driving around and, you know, whatever, I never rent a hotel room until I say, I want to see the room.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the room. I want to see that the faucet works. I want to see that the shower has flow. I want to even kind of pull back the sheet and make sure it's been changed. And if you've got a good, reputable hotelier, they'll say, fine, that's great, because they're proud of what they're putting out. So be careful.
Yeah, without a doubt. So, you know, those are things you've got to be watch out for any kind of unsolicited phone calls you might get. All of a sudden, you're just sitting around your house or you get a call or a text message you're saying, oh, hey, you can have this 3-day, 2-night cruise, you know, down in Florida or wherever, which may sound good for $99, whatever
right.
It might be. But then you have to remember that, okay, we live here in the middle of Fort Gatonia. It's going to cost you money to get down there. That $29 or $99 cruise that they're going to give you has all types of other fees that could be associated with it.
And they'll probably want you to listen to about how you can buy a timeshare or you could be a frequent traveler. And if you don't go to the required meeting, you lose your $99.
Correct. And you could be charged full price for that. So, you know, if you're going to, you know, do a big family trip to, you know, like a destination something or other, you know, get the details in writing before making that final payment. Get all the details, total costs, restrictions, any cancellation penalties you might have, the names of the airlines and the hotels. I'm sure that when you did that, whoever was in charge of that mm-hmm. got all that information for you, and they right. knew once you took your group, you were fine. So, you know, there's just certain pitfalls out there that we need to avoid.
We have about 2 minutes left, maybe. So what other tips do you have as we're entering into? A lot of people will be traveling by car this Memorial Day weekend, and gas prices are down, so more people are going to be encouraged to go out. Are there scams we have to be afraid of when we're in our car?
Boy, are there any scams you need to be aware of? I don't, that's a good question.